Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. There are supposed to be five of us this evening. One's gone missing. A bit like, insert a Sunderland's defender's
any
name.
Defender, yeah. Any defender.
I was going to say Wes Brown, then I was saying, well, could have said Quarez.
No, you could definitely tell that Wes Brown was playing, like.
Yeah. Not in a good way.
No, that was my point, that you don't have to spoil. I was explaining the punchline.
Well, yeah, well, I've said somebody's gone missing, so shall I get into that now? Okay, Chris Young is going to be here, but he's running late because of the traffic, and we're a little bit impatient, so we decided to start without him anyway. Gary Foster's here again. Gary, pleased to have you with us.
Get
evening.
In, get in there. Get in. We're a bit all at sea this evening because the studio's broken, so
again.
We've managed to cobble together something, so God knows what it's going to sound like at the end. We'll find out later. It does sound a bit dry. That's what I would say. It sounds a bit...
And that's not even considering the content either. Rory Fallow is here, and he makes his Wise Men Say debut tonight.
Hello, nice to be here.
Have you got your initiation song at the ready?
I have. I'm going to sing Little Mix, Take a Sip from My Secret Portion, because that was blasting out when we came in here earlier on.
Sun FM, you know, play some bouncing tunes.
And immediately switched the desk off when I got in.
Well, we might hold you to that later on if we get bored talking about the football.
We definitely won't.
Definitely won't? No. Why not?
Because why would you want to hear that? By anyone?
I don't know. We should maybe put it over vote. Anyway.
No, don't do that.
Right, okay, listen. One place to start when we think about the game and the three centre-half situation. Looking at making the decision before the game, Gary, ticks a couple of boxes. You can get Defoe on the pitch and you can get Fletcher on the pitch at the same time together. Also, I think we all know of the ability of the three two centre-halves he had available because of the injuries to O'Shea and Kabul. So paying three centre-halves is logical in a way where you think you've got an extra one there as cover. However, how much of that would you put down to the defeat?
Well, I think it didn't work, and you could see he should have changed it, but he's got limited options with the injuries, and in his defence, like you say, the Defoe Fletcher partnership really looked looked bright at times going forward. It's just that we can't defend, and that's the case with whether we've got four at the back or if you've got three at the back. I mean, one of the guys that went missing for the first goal was our man, Mr. Van Aanholt again. And he goes missing in a four, he goes missing in a five, he goes missing in a three, so it doesn't make any difference. I can understand what people are saying, but I'm guessing he felt, and Sam felt, when they got back to twos each, that he was justified in keeping it as a three at the back, and then all of a sudden the wheels came off in drastic fashion.
Didn't adjust. I mean,
I don't think it was a three at the back was the problem.
Well, it did.
It's overcommit. Like, where there was a midfield, there was so much space in the middle. I mean, Mvia and Cattermole were anonymous, really, the entire game, apart from when Mvia gave the ball away. I mean, I think the fifth goal was the worst of the lot. I mean,
the first goal you put down with the formation,
they had about six players in the box, like, and then they give the ball away. Like, that was a problem. They kept doing that. I know what you're saying. Yeah, maybe the formation, but like for the first goal, controversially, I wouldn't exactly blame Van Aanholt. I'd probably blame Billy Jones.
Yeah. I think
he's tucked right in. Where's he gone?
I think both. I think,
Van Aanholt stops coming back, and then Jones fails to track the run. So you see, I would say both.
Well, I don't know where Jones went. Where did Jones go? He's wandered in.
Yeah, he just got sucked in. He was just watching the ball and didn't even look like he was thinking of Deulofeu at all.
The problem is, I mean, if you're going to... Chris Young's just joined us here. We're just going to seamlessly slot in Chris here.
Come in between them, Chris. Come in between them.
Like you thought between two roses.
You squeeze him in. No, you don't have to move. Gary's causing problems. It's the problem.
And this brings us back to Billy Jones, the way that they were shuffling about uncomfortably amongst the three of you there. The thing is, if you're going to go to three centre-halves, you're going to expect teething problems, especially when a fullback and Billy Jones plays there. So if you're going to look at the big picture and think this is going to be a permanent thing, you have to almost just take this on the chin at times, don't you, if he's going to do that? Do you think it's a long-term thing, Chris, or do you think it's going to go in the bin like Poyet, scumble it up and put it in the bin?
Do you want to keep taking six goals on the chin?
Difficult,
though. I mean, there were positives from it in that there was two strikers up front. Johnson was pushed really high up the pitch, so almost every time Sunderland went forward, they had three red and white shirts attacking the edge of the Everton area, and he subsequently looked dangerous every time. But the problem with it for me is that Sunderland have barely got one centre-half who's been consistent this season. So can they find three? Difficult.
Jack Rodwell, interestingly, after we have this debate, we will dedicate this section of the show to the Jack Rodwell centre-half thing. And we say there's not a lot to go on, and people seem to be talking about when he was a youth player and stuff, but it's interesting that he's sort of thrown his hat into the ring almost now, hasn't it?
Probably for our best. Well, exactly. I need to play somewhere.
Exactly.
Well, I had to ask him, because he was an obvious answer, isn't it? I mean, you've tried him in midfield and he continues to struggle, continues to be unconvincing. I think you've certainly got to try it on the training ground. Allardyce was quite uncommittal about using Rodwell as a centre-half when I asked him about it last week. He was sort of, we'd have to try it in training for a long time, but then obviously circumstances forced him to change. But
might have changed his mind after
exactly.
Sunday.
I think you've got to try it.
How long did he get there on Sunday?
20 minutes or so.
Did he look okay? Or better?
Well, the game's
difficult to gauge, really, because the game was over. The game was so stretched. Sunderland heads had gone down, and Everton were rampant. So
it was such a strange game of football, wasn't it? Like, I was thinking my first 15, 20 minutes, I was like, I can't remember us looking as much of a threat in a game in years. Like, we looked really potent and like clever, and you know, causing all sorts of problems. Good movement, hit the post twice, and then you know, give the goal away. You know, the second goal's a nice move, but the keeper, like, as well, I thought it was crap. Like,
his positioning was very
I was going to say, if you took the keeper out of the goal for that goal and somebody had a shot at an empty goal and it went where it did, you would see if there was a keeper there, you'd save that comfortably, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But if you look at all the goals as well, it's like we always talk about individual mistakes. I guess if you give, we're giving quite a bit of space away in the game, and then, you know, you're more likely to create individual errors because you put yourself under more strain, which in turn means there's more opportunities to make individual errors. What isn't forgivable is someone like Quatez again, watching somebody, just ball watching.
You can't judge a flight of a ball eight yards
from goal, and you're ball watching.
You can't judge a flight of a ball, which is something that centre half needs to do. To be fair, it isn't just a minor part of your game, you know. I know, Chris, you text me saying it was sort of harrowing stuff. Would you say it was harrowing, like Leicester first game style? It looked pretty similar.
I wouldn't say that.
No, I wouldn't say so. Because as Gareth said, it was an odd game considering how well Sunderland attacked. And I think probably apart from the first half against West Ham, that's by far, in a way, the best that they've looked going forwards all season, and probably for most of last season as well.
They looked as though they were enjoying it.
They did.
That was the thing. It looked effortless. It was like they looked as though they were, you know, it was vibrant and they looked confident.
Yeah, and it suited every player on that pitch. Take away the back three.
Didn't they?
But it's a system that suits both wing-backs. It suits Catamolan and Villa. Johnson revel in that free role, and you've got two strikers who are playing as an orthodox two strikers. So
just down to the ability of the centre-half. Is it black and white?
No, I think we gave the ball away too much. Too many. It's all right bombing forward, and it's great attacking play. But like Gareth said earlier, you've got to be able to control yourself and get it back. And if you're going to get six men in their box and then give away possession cheaply, then you're going to hide into nothing. I know the game was stretched at certain times because of the goals they'd already scored, but it was just, we got back to 2-2, and then we continued to just bomb on, but keep giving the ball away cheaply.
You can't really remember anything that the midfield two did. I know, like, apart from when Envia gave the ball away a couple of times in the second half, they just didn't do anything positively or negatively. They just weren't there at all. And that was, if you look at the fourth goal, when Lukaku gets so much space, like, where was the midfield there?
I think you noticed Catamol when he went off because he wasn't there, didn't you? Because of that protection.
Well, the line was really high as well. I mean, that was quite strange.
Why were we pushing that high?
But that's the idea of playing three centre halves. We've had this debate before when you play because then, if you remember, we sort of criticised Poyet for the time he played three centre halves and played Bridcut and Cattermole and sat deep because we just couldn't get out of our one half. So
I think there's a balance there, though. You don't have to. I mean, if you're deeper, then people like Mvia and Cattermole come into the game. If you pushed up, then the space, you know, where do they go? What do they do?
I don't get why we were pushed so high up. Because surely when we go into one at half time, you're thinking, right, let's be in this with 10-15 minutes to go. So even at 3-2, it's disappointing because we've just got back to 2-2. But still,
At 3-2, I thought. They're still in the game, like at 3-2, because they could have been, you know, the 2-0 down at half time. You know, 3-2 after 55 minutes. You know, well, 2-0 down in 45 minutes, and then, you know, 10 minutes later, you're 3-2. You're in the game, and you're probably in it a bit more because you've scored twice.
Yeah.
So it gives you that confidence, doesn't it? But it's just you can't throw a game away in like 7 minutes. I mean, we have seen quite often where Sunderland concede goals in like spells like that, 5 minutes, five, 6 minute spells where they're conceding two or three goals, and that's the game over. And it was such an unusual, like that's not what you when Allardyce came. That's not what you expected, is it?
That it wasn't an Allardyce game.
It wasn't at all. It's well, just so Allardyce weird. But he set them up to play.
Just to get back to the high line, though. I mean, I read Chris's stuff afterwards, and Sam's called it kamikaze defending, so you can't think he's happy with how they bombed on.
Well, he's came out and kind of handed the blame on other players, hasn't he? Said you can't do that.
He said they lost discipline.
Because even a 2-0 down, like I was saying, I thought, well, teething problems with a 3-5-2, I think, certainly caused the first one. I think Wes Brown's just age and lack of physicality at his age to play at that level was a fault for the second one, because
it wasn't
a 1-2 like quickly the way maybe Southampton moved the ball about up the top of the field, which is a bit worrying. It was quite a laboured 1-2. You could see what he was going to do all day. But even at that point, I thought if we just keep patient, play like we are, I could see us getting 1 or 2back here. And then as soon as we got back to 2-2, was it just a case then that the players got a little bit carried away and then thought, let's go for the throat rather than just do things as you were.
It was a bit like school kids football. It was like, calm down.
Yeah, because what you would logically want to do then is you would want Everton to try and come at you
right
with it.
You
would think, okay, now they're going to have to come out the blocks and try and get this lead back, hit them on the counter, like we did against Newcastle.
They were almost more attack-minded at 2-2 than they were at 2-1.
That was
the odd thing.
You got to give credit to Everton, though. I mean, I know, like, because we'll always come on. Like now in football, credit seems to be handed out quite rarely. Everyone always talks about why when people lose, it's always because you've not been very good. Well,
Everton were excellent.
Over the park, they were very, very good.
Kone, Lukaku, really, they'll cause a lot of defensive
trouble. Like Delafeu was excellent. I mean,
Delafeu was excellent. Yeah,
like,
his dive.
Yeah, I mean, we were high for that fourth goal, but it's a fantastic ball from Delafeu, getting like a good movement off the shoulder. It was simple; it shouldn't have been as easy as that. But it was a good goal. Like the goals that they scored, yeah, there could have been more pressure on the ball. But the Delafeu's cross for the third one was excellent. You know, Lukaku's cross for the sixth one was excellent, even though he should have been pressured more, and Kwate shouldn't watch the ball.
Not off.
Yeah. So there are mistakes in there, but Everton, I mean, you know, they had, what, eight shots on target and scored six of them. So, you know, Sunderland had 9 shots on target and scored 2, 17 shots on goal. You know, you wonder, can Sunderland afford to be the kind of team who are going to be having 17 attempts on goal in a game, because you're not going to take enough of those
chances.
Well,
the way Dick Advocaat set up the season would suggest not.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Because that's what we criticised him for, being too open and being too attack-minded.
I think Advocaat had seen how the draws had really killed Sunderland last season. And it was almost better to think, well, we'll win one, we lose the next.
But that didn't win one.
That was the slight problem. Yeah. But that defence is so fragile and so open that even if you get ahead, which Sunderland haven't done very, very often this season, you're not giving them a lot of hope of holding on to it.
But let's take this, the you know, Allardyce's three games in isolation, and he had Kabul and O'Shea available. And we lost 1-0 at West Brom, which, you know, disputed goal, could have got away with that 0-0, a point. You know, it's a start. Should have really done better in the first half in that game. Didn't take the chances, but we didn't look in trouble at any point in that game. You go Newcastle, obviously. Clean sheet, three goals, away you go. And then this one, it was just completely just different. It was just such a strange game. And I feel pretty relaxed about it still. I'm still, you know, confident in a way. I mean, what, we're only 2 points from safety, which seems strange at this stage. There's plenty games left. I think there's enough there. But he's just got to get that balance right. But if he's, as he suggested, if the players are the ones who aren't listening, he's got to get that. He's got to drill that message home somehow. It's interesting he was saying how he's used 18 players, and he's got an idea of which ones he can rely on, which ones he hasn't. I know he dropped Lentz. Is he saying, well, I can't really play him because he's not going to do what I need to do going backwards? You know, I mean, I know like Van Aanholt's getting a lot of stick for the weekend, but. I mean, I didn't think he was noticeably horrific. Like
seen him worse.
Yeah, I've seen him worse than that.
But I think is that not tempered because he looked so good going forward that you sort of forget that he's gone missing again.
Maybe, but I think
it's just some of him as a player.
You look at it, but you're looking at.
I think his performance summed up the whole team's performance.
Yeah.
It's just. I think, you know, there's other players on the pitch apart from, like, a young lad who's, like, you know, learning a difficult position at the top level. You know, you look at, you know, experienced players on the pitch who, you know, people like Brown, and I know it's probably an age thing.
And he hasn't played.
And he hasn't played, no. But he didn't. It's just you're expecting somebody like that to, like, you know, really, like, take people by the scruff of the neck and that, and he just...
But then, didn't we all expect the Sam Allardyce team to take... You wouldn't expect the Sam Allardyce team to play that way and to concede them kind of... I know he's only been here 2 minutes, but I think that's what shocked people as well. We thought, like, all right, we didn't think the Derby win was the be-all and end-all, didn't solve all of our problems, but we thought, oh, maybe he's got them a bit more organised. I know Newcastle played very well in the first half and were unlucky, but maybe he's got them playing a bit more... spirit, and I know there was a change in personnel as well, but I was just shocked to see an Allardyce team going forward so gung-ho, especially after getting back to 2-2, and you could hear the Everton fans really starting to get on the Everton players' backs, and you're thinking, right, just hold on for another 10 minutes, just keep them out for another 10 minutes and they'll start to turn it.
His comments after the game suggest that wasn't his game plan either, though.
No,
So the players have sort of went off on the...
But you do wonder, wonder that first 15, 20 minutes, one of those chances goes in.
No, we can't do it.
But you're talking about the crowd getting on the back. One of those goes in. That first goal is really important.
Again, though, Gareth, can you see that defence holding on to the rest of 90 minutes for a 1-0 win?
But I think it's different, though, when you... If you go one or two up and then you're hanging on to something rather than coming back into a game from 2-0 down and then going a little bit,
even going,
you know.
going back to the Derby game, not to labour the point, but just as Chris said there, a 3-0 up, I was only half joking, but I turned to my mates and went, if we get another one, I'll be confident we can see this out now without shipping a load of goals, because that's what it is. And as Chris says, like, I think we do need to go ahead first, we really do, because of confidence, the way confidence is. But even then, you go 1-0 up and you're just thinking, well, one mistake away from the wheels coming off here again. You know, and you need to go 2 or 3 up to even think, oh, well, we can ship one now, but we might still be all right. And you're constantly waiting for the mistake to come.
It's how long you can hang on. How long are we going to have left to hang on to?
Yeah,
I mean, but 7 minutes wouldn't have been long enough. You concede one in the 83rd minute, you'd be 4-0 down by the 90th minute. It's funny, isn't it? It's just the way Sunderland are.
It's a weird state of affairs.
It was very Sunderland-y yesterday, wasn't it? It was like the ultimate Sunderland performance.
But what's worrying for me, Stephen just touched on there, Sam sort of distancing himself, sort of making sure the people knew that that wasn't his kind of performance either. So if they're not listening to Sam, they obviously weren't listening to previous man. I mean, are they alone to themselves?
So
like,
we'll just go and
play which way we want, lads?
So we have a sweepstake into how many games into the season before Allardyce says there's a deep-lying problem at this football club and there's something going on behind the scenes and I don't know what it is.
But they all can't be wrong, can they? I mean, it's like the same play. Well, to a large extent, the same players are there, or there's a core of the same players, and all these managers that's come in and been lauded on the way to Sunderland and sort of gone with their tails between the legs on the way out to Sunderland, you know what I mean? They can't all be wrong. You know, there's got to be something.
Sam does strike me as someone who wouldn't turn to that as easily as other managers have.
No, probably not. But he also strikes me as somebody who'll come out and say, it's not my fault, it's them. They're not. I don't know if he'll back them as much as other managers have and sort of try to protect them by saying, look, we're working on stuff, we're trying to get there. I think he will actually come out and say, that's not what I told them to do. That's not what I wanted. Do you know what I mean? I really think you will.
You're totally right, but then when you're looking at defenders, his options are very limited in that respect, aren't you? So if you come out, if you bomb, who are you going to bomb them out for? Like, you can't say, right, okay, that was... If Kabul and O'Shea continue to be injury-prone this season, you can't just bomb Brown out and Quattas out because nobody else to play.
Well, he keeps saying he's looking for a Bosman striker. He might have to look for four Bosman centre-halves or something.
He desperately needs new defenders in January. He needs a new centre-half and a left-back who can defend. Because Van Aanholt, I think if you put him on the left wing or even as a left wing-back, going forward, his pace is his chief asset, but he's just got no spatial awareness.
I don't think he did,
Gareth. I think Poyet set up a system to protect him because he sat so deep. He had that holding midfielder of a Catamola brick cut. It was all to protect Van Aanholt.
I think he also, much as I'm not the kid's biggest fan, I think it was to the detriment of Wickham because Wickham was made to do the dog's work on the left-hand side, which took away from slightly protected Van Aanholt, whereas other people, like Lenz and that, won't do that. And I think it's come more to the fore.
Remember the QPR game last season where we did play without those three across and we played that diamond.
Gomez was ahead of him, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Van Aanholt just got exposed time after time.
To be fair, he didn't have like anyone protecting him there, though. That's it.
Gomez wasn't anyone protecting him, though.
Like, that's a thing. I'm reluctant to... Like, I don't really like it when people get, like, individuals get blamed vehemently. And, like, yesterday you could see people like Van Aanholt straight away. It was like, oh, well, it's Van Aanholt's fault because he's came back in. And people are, like, desperate. But there's, like I was saying, there's other people out there with more experience than him who should be taking responsibility for situations. And nobody did. And this team isn't good enough for... You know, you can carry some players in a team like Sunderland, but you can't carry a lot of them. And I think, you know, all across the back, Yedlin thought did all right, but you know,
again he was bombing too far forward, wasn't he?
And again, his distribution wasn't at times the best. Which when you're bombing forward to give a ball away cheaply, and then you're on the back foot. I know he's quick, but like. And I'm not trying to start a Van Aanholt. I think I blamed him and Jones equally for the first goal.
Yeah,
they both switched off.
And I think I blamed other, like we've done on the night, blamed other people for the goals that followed. But I just find, as somebody who played very, 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 very low level as a defender, I find it absolutely amazing that he gets to his age playing in defence and doesn't, like Chris said, doesn't seem to have the spatial awareness or the marking awareness. I know it's a much, much higher level and you're going to get tested, but it's basics of following your man. And he's quick enough to get back and he doesn't always try, he doesn't always bust a gut, which is what annoys me. Not making the mistake, but if you then bust a gut to get back and you don't get back, then fair enough, you've tried. Sometimes he's just jogging back like a Sunday league player.
Do you think he subconsciously relieved himself of defensive duties because he thought he was a wing-back as opposed to a full-back, perhaps?
maybe he thought,
I don't have to go in and do this.
Maybe, that, but then he doesn't. You can argue that he's similar at left-back as well.
He's not, you know, if you got rid of Van Aanholt and got a left-back in and did the job, then it's still not going to solve every little problem we've got, and it's still not going to solve all the defensive woes we've got. But I think even taking a little bit of pressure off him by having somebody there, and maybe even push him on, because he knows he's really the only left back we've got. I know you can put Jones there, and you could maybe use the Edlin across there. But
the back four looks solid in Sam's first two games. I know, like, it makes a big difference because 50% of it's gone now, yeah. Edward, O'Shane, well, and Kabul. But also, it shows that he could defend with that shape, but it gets back to the four Fletcher thing, doesn't it? Trying to get them all on the same side.
I know the system thing's been talked about, and Sam's said it doesn't matter what system you play if you don't do your job properly and all this, which is correct, yeah. What I would say is, when you get into a spell of the game like the second half of the first half, when things are a little bit ragged and it's not a system you're used to playing, you could see the players looking around, always looking for the shape, so that where am I supposed to be, where am I supposed to be going? And as a result, people aren't pressuring the ball because they're looking behind them, looking around them, where's you know, Mvia, where's the centre-backs, where is Van Aanholt? But they're doing that, and then as a result, Everton are just like knocking the ball in front of them, and
yeah.
Nobody's getting out of the ball because people are the kind of going, well, we need to stay in shape and be compact and not get played through. But I think, like, with a system like that, I mean, it wasn't even a 3-5-2, it was almost like a 3-4-3.
It was, yeah.
I mean, like, I know Johnson did some good stuff, but I mean, we talk about luxury players and stuff like that in the modern game. Asking someone, like, just say to Johnson, like, oh, just go in there, go and do whatever you want. I mean, Imagine that, you'd just be like, oh, brilliant, and you just like run around, and then you'd be like, oh, never mind.
I thought he did some good stuff, but he did.
But that is a luxury. I mean, you can't just have somebody essentially just playing where he wants. Like, it was like a school kid number 10.
Yeah,
it wasn't a number 10. It was just like your best player in your team, and you go and just like run around and do what you want, sort of thing. And that's what it was. It was very weird, and like sometimes like Billy Jones would just be like on the edge of the box or something like that when we were attacking, and then he'd be like, well, why are you there? And then Yedlin would be like inside, and
I think the idea was probably to have five defenders and Catamolan and Villa sitting and keep that sort of defensive unit intact, and then have three people forward who could do basically most of the attacking. But then everyone else seemed to want to attack as well.
Well, that's what it was like. It was like, you scored a goal. It's my turn. It's my turn for a goal. I haven't scored one today.
Which would suggest, though, Chris, then, if that's where you think that he could be prepared to stick with it, if he thinks the players just need more patience and more discipline.
I don't know. I mean, he said he didn't have long to prepare it on the training ground, because obviously they were waiting on the news about Kabul, I think, principally. I think it'll probably depend on the fitness of Kabul and O'Shea.
And how are the fitness to some extent.
The hint from him yesterday was still sort of that it might be until after the international break before they're back, which doesn't bode well.
What's Beedling done? Has he broken his ankle or something?
He broke his ankle a couple of months ago. So he's back in training, but he hasn't played for the 21s.
So who are the defenders for the 21s? Are any of them, do you think, up to it? Would they be better than Billy Jones or Quates at centre-half?
Michael Ledger has only just come up from the 18, so this is his first year as a senior pro. And then George Brady is coming from Chelsea. I'm not sure. Beedling would be the one.
Yeah.
He's the best of the defensive bunch coming through, but he's not
available. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we always do the, you know, kind of joke about the chucking the kids and thing. But, you know, I think there is an argument. If there is a player who understands the position he's playing in, and he's playing there. I mean, the under-21s have only conceded about five goals in eight games or something, haven't they? So, now I'm not saying it's a totally different level and all that. I'm not going to like contradict myself in that point, but, you know, sometimes you think, well, you know, what is there any value in playing someone? That fourth goal is a basic goal to concede, isn't it? And
which one's the fourth goal?
The Kaku where he's gone clean through.
Yeah.
You'd think that's the only thing that stopped that goal. Well, we're too high, and then Brown's not quick enough to recover. No. Is he not fast enough? Well, you'd like to think that some of the younger lads would be a bit quicker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing they are lacking, is the pace at the back in the centre half positions. And, you know, you can go back this summer again and look at, you know, you know, Quattes, you can understand why they signed him for £1 or 2 million or whatever, but in my opinion, on the strength of six games last season, in the kind of way we set up, he was never going to... He's not a starter.
I think as your fourth-choice centre-half, you'd be pretty happy with Quattes,
exactly.
If you're in the bottom reaches the
Premier League. You don't want to start the season with him.
When O'Shea's had to guide him through it.
He needs someone to guide him through. He's like Van Aanholt. He hasn't got the concentration.
If it's back to the wall, defending, and he's up for it, and he wants to chuck his body in the way and win headers and out-muscle people, great.
Yeah.
But when not every game is back to the wall defending away a big club. And he hasn't done that this season either. He's like, what, was told about him before, and he must be about 15 stone, 16 stone, 6'5" bloke, and he gets bullied. And it's pathetic. Like, at times to watch that, it's embarrassing. I know he's a young lad as well, but come on.
But like, it's like you say about Van Aanholt, it's spatial awareness as well. Was it the fifth goal where he just didn't
have... He won't be the only one that gets bullied by Luke Carter this season, to be fair.
But that goal where the cross came in the air, he didn't even get bullied, he just didn't have a clue where the ball was.
He did it against Exeter. It was practically exactly the same goal he conceded against Exeter, where he's got under the ball and the lads headed it down and someone scored from a knockdown who was under no pressure whatsoever. But it's the same. He's done it against a team. I don't think they played any strikers or something. No. Exeter that night, I think they played like with a false number nine or something. I'm sure Barnsley was saying that.
They conceded three goals. If he's fourth choice, then fair enough. But you get what you pay for, don't you?
And then we're talking about that. How far down the list are we going to get to Wes Brown on his current situation, and how far down we're going down the list to say that Billy Jones is a centre-half now, after playing at left-back quite well for the last few games. I understand it's a change in system and he's not a wing-back, so if they want to play wing-backs, but if you're going to play three at the back and then you have to move him inside, I know Roberge is, what, he's got not, he hasn't got a squad number or anything, has he? But yeah, I mean, even him, I mean, he kept a clean sheet at Everton with Diakite, and Brown and Coates kept a clean sheet 5 months ago at Everton. So... It's only 5 months ago. It's not that long ago. So you can defend if you want to. But I don't know. It's just you have to question...
The deep line issue.
We talk about defending all the time, and like, you got to want to defend. Like, defending galvanises teams. You defend as a team. It builds the spirit. At the moment, they just don't want to defend.
I'm not sure they've got the personnel to do it.
But you've got to want it, though.
I completely agree, Gareth. I don't think they've got the personnel. Mm.
But do you think at times yesterday that maybe after the second one that there were the desire to defend was there?
I don't think it was the desire. I just think it was the ability.
Do you think so? I don't know. I thought it was a little bit pedestrian at times.
Maybe for the fifth and sixth, but certainly for the third and fourth.
In the first half, I thought after we conceded the second,
I think Everton were toying with them a little bit.
Even the second goal, Brown is just...
I know it's an ability issue, I think. What about his age
and his fitness? The way he's just so slow to reacting.
I don't think
it's lagged,
it's the same. It's just... Like Chris
and it's all well and good. In an ideal world, everyone's saying, a lot of people compare it to Gary Neville's last performance for Man U. They say when he realised he couldn't do it anymore. And that's all well and good, but if you've got nobody else to play,
that's the problem. It's
no good just saying, okay, on your bike, whereas if there's nobody else to come in, unless he had a signing lined up. Bosman signing lined up.
Well, also that, yesterday as well, I read a lot of people saying, "Oh, I can't believe we kept Brown and got rid of Revier." I mean, that's a point and a different day of the week. But having another right back in the squad yesterday wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever. We had a right back playing at centre half. What are you going to play Revier and Jones at centre half with Coates? Dear me, I mean, what would that have been like? But it's just when things start to go a bit wrong, everyone starts to come out and start saying, well, what about this, what about that? I think, like you say, the ability is an issue, and it's been something that's been a problem since the summer. But, yeah, I think you've got to take Sam's three games in isolation, though, and say what he's taken a point a game, three, Everton, you'd probably think, if we'd got a point at West Brom, which probably deserved the win against Newcastle and then the defeat at Everton, it wouldn't look so bad. I think it was just I thought at the time Sunderland, it was the best and worst of Sunderland in one game yesterday. I thought it was just very strange.
I mean, just to finish up here, because we've got to leave the studio slightly earlier tonight. Are people generally confident on the Sam? I guess I'll just finish up on relating it to Aston Villa, who made an appointment today, Remy Garden. I know I've said it before, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I'm just particularly happy that we beat them to Sam, because would you rather have a French guy who come in who with a lot of French players, or would you rather have somebody...
Rory made a good point in the car when we're on the way.
Somebody who comes in who knows the English game, knows how to grind results out.
Saying on the way here, like, with Remy Gard, that's a good manager to bring in if you've got the pre-season under him. He can bring in his own players and have that settled pre-season of players getting into his own methods. Is that the kind of appointment you want to make when you want to, like, give your players a bit of a lift for a bounce and then take them from there? I think I would rather have that safe pair of hands with Allardyce.
I agree. Absolutely. That's a good place to finish it. So,
actually, we need to mention that we're moving to Acast, which is a point.
Get a dash on.
Yeah, so we've been in talks, negotiations, and the yellow tick has gone through and that, and we're moving to Acast. So you'll find that this RSS feed that you'll be listening to the thing on, if you're listening to iTunes, will still exist for a little while on iTunes, and then there'll be another one that appears soon, and that'll be the Acast one. Eventually we'll move over to that. SoundCloud will be no more, so if you listen on SoundCloud, you'll be able to listen on the Acast app. Similar interface to SoundCloud's pretty much the same. You'll be able to find the shows on there, and if you subscribe on RSS with an Android device, then there'll be a new RSS feed. So when we get all the details finalised totally, We'll hand out the new RSS feed. The main reason we're doing it is just because it costs us about £25 a month to do the podcast, and we don't make any money from it. In moving to Acast, it won't cost us anything. So it's a bit of a faff, but, you know, it saves us some money. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Join us on Thursday for Into the Light. Thanks for listening. Over and out.